This podcast was first broadcast on Mix 92.6. Go to mix92.6.com to find more Environment Matters podcasts. And if you enjoy what we do, to find out how you can support the station, which is run entirely by volunteers. I hope you enjoy the podcast. Welcome to Environment Matters with me, Amanda Yorworth. Environment Matters is the show that brings you news on issues of sustainability and the environment from around Hertfordshire and from further afield. Now, if you heard last week's show, you'll have heard me out and about at Hartwood Arboretum, being shown round by Professor Brian Legg, one of the Hartwood volunteers who thought up the idea of the Arboretum. And all the trees in the Arboretum were selected, sourced, planted, and are cared for by these volunteers. The Arboretum is up to the northeast corner of Hartwood, not far from No Man's Land car park, just to the south of Wheatamstead. If you missed last week's show, then you didn't hear how the Arboretum is a collection of all of the native trees of the British Isles, including the strawberry tree, hanging on there in the south of Ireland, even though it's really at home in the Mediterranean, the Plymouth pear, so rare that the specimens in the Arboretum had to be germinated from the Millennium Seed Bank, and willows that were a crucial part of our war effort during the First World War. But you don't have to miss out. Head to the podcast page of mix92.6.com and there you can listen at your leisure. And make sure that you don't miss any other episodes by subscribing to the Environment Matters podcast with your favourite podcast provider. Now this week, we return to Hartwood Arboretum, this time to hear about the trees that could have been responsible for the Fire of London, the tree known by the Romans as the Tree of a Thousand Uses, and about how the Arboretum has become a sanctuary for so many different types of wildlife. Let's pick up my tour of the Arboretum with Professor Brian Legg. So this tree is a little bit unusual, isn't it? It's got lovely green leaves and with quite prominent parallel veins, quite nice big broad leaves, but then it's got little cones on, and we're used to seeing cones on coniferous trees, but here they are on a broadleaf tree. What's this tree then?
Well, this is the alder, and it is one on its own. We don't have any closely related trees here. Several interesting things. One is that the roots can fix nitrogen, the same as peas and beans. And so it means it can grow, for example, in waterlogged soils where there's very little nitrogen going to be available. The other interesting thing is, if you go to the National Gunpowder Museum in Waltham Abbey, you'll see a lot of alder trees growing. And the reason is that the charcoal made from alder wood was the very best charcoal for making gunpowder. So again, everything has one particular use that it's particularly good for. It's also very resistant to rotting under water, and so it's used for shoring up riverbanks and stream banks. And also, amazingly, some of the buildings in Venice are built on foundations made of alder wood.
Wow, and that's because it just doesn't rot when it's in the water. Amazing how people found that out, really, isn't it?
It is, and there's other stories like that, because the elm was used to make water pipes. And who would have thought that? You can make a pipe by gluing sections together and binding it round. And many of the cities, including Bristol in this country, had all their water pipes made with elm wood.
Wow, amazing. So not all of the trees that you've got here at the Arboretum are unusual, and they're not all the kind of things that we won't see locally. Actually, some of them are really very important local trees, aren't they? Can you tell us about the most important ones?
Yes, well, most of the woods in Hertfordshire contain a lot of hornbeam, and that hornbeam was valuable for fuel. In fact, it also could be used for things like, it's very hard wood, could be used for the cogs on water wheels and other areas where you want a really hard wearing wood. But the way that it was grown is that it was coppiced, that is, cut right down to the ground, roughly every 10 or 15 years. And then it throws up probably half a dozen shoots. And after 10 or 15 years, they are big enough that you can harvest them. And so it really was a tree farm, you know, rather than just a wood. And that's what we have here at Hartwood. And we've grown, in fact, two plots of hornbeam. One is we're going to let it grow to full size, so you can see what a tree looks like. And the other one we're going to coppice again every 10 or 15 years, so you can see how it would have been grown, and still is grown in many places, by being coppiced.
Yes, indeed. And I suppose that people might know the bluebell wood, Langley wood.
Yes.
And that's a wood which has got a lot of hornbeam in it and things like oak as well.
Yes, typical way to grow it would be with hornbeam that's coppiced and, as I say, harvested every 10 or 15 years, but also a few oak trees or maybe ash trees, quite widely spaced. But when the Lord of the Manor wanted a new building, he'd get people to come and cut it down. But as you can imagine, cutting down a mature oak tree with hand tools was quite a game.
Yes, I can imagine it was. And I suppose the thing we have to remember is that in a time when people didn't have access to fossil fuels, of course, all of their energy would have come from this coppiced wood, wouldn't it? Things keep warm, things for cooking, all the things we take for granted there.
Yes, a lot of the hornbeam apparently was harvested here and sent into London, and it was used for firing the bread ovens of London. So it was an essential fuel for the capital.
Yes, indeed. And you have a thought about what might have been one of the results of it, don't you?
Well, this is an apocryphal story, but I just wonder, you know, the Great Fire of London started with in a bread oven, and I just wonder whether it might have been burning hornbeam that came from here in Hartwood.
Well, says we'll never know that, but it's nice to suppose, isn't it?
Yeah.
Okay, right. Then. So, Brian, I do recognise this one. This is a tree we do see a lot around our towns around here. This is lime trees, isn't it? And
yes.
Do lime trees have any particular use other than making our town streets look rather nice?
Yes, they have flowers which are sweetly scented, and so that's one joy of lime trees. They also have the flowers that bees love to visit, and it makes a honey which is very nice tasting. In addition to that though, the Romans called lime wood as the wood of a thousand uses, because it's quite soft and easy to carve, and they would have made spoons and bowls and all sorts of kitchen implements using the wood of the lime tree.
Wow. So I suppose a lot of the things that we make out of plastic now, they'd have made out of this nice, easy, soft, relatively quickly growing wood.
Absolutely. Yeah. And completely renewable, of course.
Yes. Yes, that's right indeed. And also completely compostable once they've finished with it.
Yeah. You could indeed. Or burn it, for that matter.
True, yes. Nice.
Golly, the spindle's looking sick.
It's dreadful, doesn't it?
It's been attacked by the spindle moth.
Not looking good. This is another area here, Brian, where I wouldn't really have associated this with being trees, but you've got some rose bushes. Well, I say rose bushes. Some of it looks sort of just a bit sort of thickety, but this particular patch of rose bushes is looking absolutely beautiful, covered in absolutely lovely white flowers. So again, it's not a type of rose that I think I've seen wild around here. What's this?
Yes, there are altogether 12 different species of wild rose in the British Isles. And we decided we hadn't really got room for all 12, but we have got four of them. And this one is called the Scotch Rose or the Burnet Rose. And it's quite interesting. I was walking the Northumberland Coast Path a couple of years ago, and there were these Burnet Roses along the wayside all the way. You don't see it in Hertfordshire. But it is stunningly beautiful. And like so many things of our trees and shrubs, it suckers. And so where we can still see individual plants at the moment, it will eventually just be a solid mass of burnet rose trees.
Indeed. And is this just literally a wild plant, or would this have had any traditional use?
It certainly grows wild, I say, particularly in the northern part of England and Scotland. And the hips, as with I think all roses, it can be used to make rose hip syrup, and that's very rich in vitamin C. So it was recommended during the war, for example, that people made the rose hip syrup.
Wow, so we are looking to trees not just for building materials, not just to make things for our houses, but also in some cases for food as well. That's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah.
So this is a tree here, isn't it, Brian, that I suppose some people might be familiar with if they're a fan of sloe gin. What's this then?
Well, it's blackthorn, And it's famous, I guess, for being the first of our shrubs to flower in the spring. And it's covered absolutely with masses of white flowers. Then, as you say, it has the sloes in the autumn, from which you can make sloe gin if you wish. It's quite interesting here that only a proportion of the ones we planted survived. But like many of our trees, it suckers. That means it grows from the roots. And now you can see that all the gaps are being filled up with very small blackthorn that will grow and fill those gaps.
Yes, indeed. And it's quite popular with the birds, isn't it? Because it's so spiky and really gives them protection. And of course, with all the berries that they feed on as well.
Yes, it's favoured for nesting. When it's solid, the white throats and other small warblers and so on will very likely come here.
Yes.
For nesting.
Yeah. And the blackthorn is one of the species that you've used in your hedging around here, because of course that's the other thing that we used trees for, we still do, but in the past in particular, rather than building fences, of course hedges. Can you tell us what you're doing with what you've done with your hedges around the Arboretum?
Well, the first thing is we've planted three lengths of hedge, which are each quite long, more than 200 yards long, and what we decided to do was put in a huge mix of different species. We've actually put in 30 different species in the hedge. They're not all ideal hedge species, but what we're going to do is to lay the hedges. That means that you cut about 90% through the stem, just above the ground level, and then lean them over to an angle of about 30 degrees, and you hold them with stakes, and then you bind the stakes together with binders at the top. And the reason that was done is twofold, really, or there are two reasons. One is that if you do it well, it will be thick enough that a newborn lamb can't get through, and it should be strong enough that even a charging bull won't break it down. And what I like about hedge laying is that the whole thing is made entirely with natural materials. There are no nails, there are no screws, there's no plastic, there's no string. It's all made just by winding together with the stakes that you've got from your hazel plantation.
Indeed, and it's never going to blow over in the wind either, is it?
No chance.
And I love that the Arboretum is being used. It's not just a place for wildlife, not just a place for trees, but as you're saying, a place for people to learn some of these skills before they're forgotten.
Absolutely. Early on, all of the plots were labelled, but now some of those have gone. But we will get labels back in here. But there is a guidebook. And if you're interested, that gives the uses, lists all these species with pictures, and it says what the uses have been over the years.
Yes, indeed. And where can we get a copy of that guidebook, Brian?
From Carpenter's Nursery, which is just south of Sandridge, and they always have them in stock.
Okay, good to know. And finally, Brian, I would just like to chat to you about the wildlife that has made the Arboretum its home. As we've been walking around here, the birdsong has been amazing, particularly from the skylarks. Can you just tell us a little bit about any of the particular species that have come and are enjoying being in the Arboretum?
Yes, between the various plots of trees and shrubs, we have let the grass grow long, and in some areas it's been sown with wildflower mix, and of course the wildlife loves that. And so it's rich with butterflies if you come then, and altogether 30 different species of butterfly have been identified here at Hartwood. Because we let the grass grow a little longer, and we cut it down just once a year in the autumn, it means it's perfect for skylarks to nest, and we've been hearing those all morning. And we've had meadow pipits nesting here as well. On top of that, I mean, the little warblers, I think, are just magnificent. There was a blackcap singing earlier. White throats are always here. We have chiffchaffs. We have altogether six different species of warbler.
Wow, so it really has become not just a fabulous place to see trees, not just a lovely place to see some wildflowers, but a lovely place to come and listen to lovely bird song as well. Brian, I think you and your volunteers should be very proud of what you've achieved here. And I'd just like to say a big thank you for showing me round today.
You're very welcome. I love showing people around. And I have to give praise to the band of volunteers, because we have a lot of volunteers. They work hard and they're really essential for the maintenance of the forest.
Well, it's great that all of their care seems to have paid off. A huge thank you to Professor Legg for taking me round the Hartwood Arboretum and sharing with me some of the stories behind the native trees that are planted there. Now, I would thoroughly recommend a walk around the Hartwood Arboretum. Not only will you get to see examples of all of the British Isles native trees, but you'll also get to enjoy the beautiful song of the many skylarks there, the swathes of wildflowers, and the many butterflies that they attract. Now, added to that, I think that because it's a little further away from the Hartwood car park, it does tend to be quite a serene place, nice place to escape the crowds. Also, in the eastern half of Hartwood, you'll find the community orchard, which is also a lovely place, particularly in the spring when the blossom is out, or in the autumn when you can see all the different varieties of fruit that are growing there. Now, to make your trip even easier, I'll pop a link to a map of Hartwood with both the Arboretum and community orchards marked on into the notes that go with the podcast of this show, and that you'll find on the podcast page of Mix92. And if you're taking part in the Wildlife Trust's 30 Days Wild, and frankly it's never too late to join in, then I do think that learning to identify a few of our native trees would be a wonderful act of wildness. Professor Legg told you about the Hartwood Arboretum guidebook, but there's also a guide to the butterflies of Hartwood and the wildflowers of Hartwood. And I do think it's rather nice to have a guidebook that only has in it things that you actually have a chance of seeing. And the butterfly guidebook I do think would be particularly handy if you took part in this year's Big Butterfly Cant, coming up in just a few weeks over at Hartwood. And if you need a little more inspiration about spending time observing nature, then check out the Herts and Middlesex Wildlife Trust's Nature Journaling Workshop next Sunday at Cassiobury Park. You'll get to learn how to closely observe something that interests you and then, under the guidance of a couple of local artists, paint, sketch or perhaps write about that particular natural thing. Again, I'll make sure that I pop the link into the notes that accompany the podcast of this show. Now, it's always good to hear from you via email. I'm on amanda.yourworth@mix926.com or look for Environment Matters on Mix92.6 on Twitter and on Facebook. I'm off to do my random act of wildness for the day. Thought I might spend 10 minutes in the garden and see which flowers were most favoured by visiting bees. I'll be with you at the same time next week, but until then, thank you for listening.